I've Leslie, I'm an addict. When I was listening to George, I could hardly hear the first bit of his share. I hadn't thought about this at all, you know, and I got here and suddenly thought, I'm sharing for 40 minutes. It's an enormous meeting, you know. And George was sharing and suddenly my heart was, you know, pounding. But I've been out with a friend and we've been around Oxford Street today, which is absolute complete madness. And coming in here in the moment's silence just felt so fantastic. You know, suddenly I felt sort of in myself instead of, you know, just in a million pieces. And I love what you said about coming into NA, George. I got clean in NA in NA meetings. I didn't do treatment. I wasn't really using that much by the time I got to NA. Everything I've got now and everything I've done is because I've come to NA meetings. And I was thinking, since I've been here, I've seen people that I haven't seen for a while, and I feel, you know, a lot of love from people and a lot of support, and I've had a lot of that over the last couple of years, and I'll probably share a bit about that, because I've had a difficult few years over the last few years, and I've really been supported by the fellowship. I mean, really, really supported and loved. You know, it's been a great thing for me being in recovery, and it continues to be. There's so many things I could share about. I was thinking with Chris. You know, I've got lots of sort of things that have happened to me around Christmas. You know, when I was using and when I've been in recovery, and I thought, you know, I'll share some of those. I did think I should make some notes or something, you know, for 40 minutes, but I haven't done that. So I'm afraid, you know, it's just a kind of stream of consciousness, and maybe I'll get to the end of 40 minutes. You know. And maybe I won't. We'll just have to see. I on Thursday nights I do a meeting in Brentford, and it's an hour meeting. It's a brilliant meeting, you know. I'm going through the steps again, and I can't think which step it was in. But in sort of one of the early steps, I wrote. I was writing some stuff, and I said. I'd really like to start getting to a step meeting again, and I probably need to explain. It's so hard to think where to start. I was thinking, you know, I really need to do a step meeting, and it just seemed really difficult. You know, it means I'd have to travel, you know, get off a stop early or something on the tube. It's all seemed, you know, a bit too much bother. And someone at my home group, I do a meeting in Acton on Wednesday, which is my home group. Said, I really want to start up another meeting. And a sort of group of us met up, and we decided we wouldn't have a chair. We'd have an hour meeting at 7 o'clock. So it's a brilliant meeting. You know, it's just down the road from me. I can go in there on the way home. And one week we do a step, and the other week we do a chapter out of the book, you know. So we've just got to the end of that. So that must be 24 weeks. You know, we've done 12 steps and chapters and traditions. It's a bit funny maths that to have got to the traditions and the chapters, but we kind of amalgamated things. And last night we read Who is an Addict? You know, we've just started it again. And I've been really, really busy at work. And I just finished work last night and I had this reading and I was in tears, you know. It's just such a fantastic reading. You know, when I first started coming to meetings, I started coming to meetings about this time of year, actually, and I got clean in May. And when I was about 3 months clean, I went on holiday, and I had a little boy. A friend of mine took us on holiday. And my sponsor was a bit worried about me going away, you know, because I was only, like, a couple of months clean. And she said, take your recovery text with you, you know, and read it. And I can remember at that time thinking, oh, this is so American. You know, it's not very well written, all that kind of stuff. And now I think, you know, I read it and I think, this is some of the truest stuff that I have ever read. You know, it really understands sort of me and who I am, you know. And it doesn't talk about drugs, but it talks about addiction, you know. And my problem is the disease of addiction, you know. Really, you know, I've been clean for a while and I understand myself a bit better. And I know a bit about the nature of my defects, and I know that if I'm overtired, that I'm more likely to kind of sort of fall into a lot of those things, you know, like how I was in a meeting this morning actually, and the guy was saying, you know, my world is dependent on my relationship with myself. You know, how I feel about myself really colours everything in my world, and that's so true for me. You know, I've just had a lot of things on at work, and I thought they were going to finish last week, and instead it sort of kept on, and it's been very, very pressured, and I'm really tired. And, you know, and what that's done to me is it's just made me feel really bad about myself, you know, very, just really sort of bad about myself, and very, I kind of find it difficult to relate to people, you know, I can kind of feel not good enough and, you know, not able to relate and things like that. So, you know, I'm intending not to do a lot over Christmas, actually. What I really want to do, actually, over Christmas is I really want to do volunteering at this Wandsworth thing. And I phoned up at someone and they haven't phoned me back. And, it just, you know, that for me is the most worrying thing about Christmas, actually, that I might not, you know, get the opportunity to do that. Anyway, there are so many things I could talk about. You know, I think a couple of sort of things about Christmas, you know, when I was using. I had towards the end of my using, I had a son. He was about sort of 7 or 8 by then. I took him down to my parents just before Christmas to see my parents. And we stayed down there longer than I thought. And I started getting really sort of sick down there, you know, because I didn't have any gear with me. And it was sort of quite a long way out of London, and it just sort of felt more and more difficult to sort of leave, you know, because I felt ill and it was snowy outside, and you know, and eventually my parents sort of took me to the train. I got on the train and I went up to London, and I started walking home. I got to Earl's Court and I was with my son, And by then I just felt, you know, really, really incapable and unable to do anything, really, you know. And he was sort of helping me and we were sort of struggling back and no buses came along. We had to walk down to World's End, which is where we lived at the time. And I got to a point I just couldn't go on anymore, you know. I just sort of stopped and said to him, you know, you've got to go home and get, you know, my partner, and Mummy can't make it home, you know. And he went home and got my partner, and my partner came and got me and sort of, you know, pretty much carried me back home, and you know, and I kind of had a hit, and I guess I was sort of okay after that. And another Christmas, you see, my Christmas was sort of important for my parents, you know, and I always like to have family Christmases. And so, you know, we always used to go there. It was always really disruptive, you know. I'd turn up with people and cause big arguments, you know, because I thought, you know, just because I felt out of sorts for myself, you know. And, I had one Christmas where I was at home. It was the Christmas that I was pregnant, actually, and I had some friends who were going to come over to my place for Christmas, and one of the guys didn't turn up, and he had an Australian who was living with him, and he eventually turned up, and this guy had sort of cut his throat and cut his wrists over Christmas, and really, you know, Christmas was just a nightmare. Christmas was always just a nightmare for one reason or another. You know, couldn't get gear, arguments with my family, you know, this guy, you know, trying to kill himself, just, you know, just awful. And and I got into recovery, and Christmases were still difficult. And I can remember my sponsor moved out of London, and I was looking for another sponsor, and I was following this woman around meetings because I really wanted to ask her to sponsor me, and she was, you know, she was just really, really fantastic, and I was really kind of nervous about asking her. And she was in a meeting, and it was around the back of Kensington High Street. And she said, "I've just had a lovely Christmas with my family." And I thought, she must be lying, you know. I just had a Christmas with my family. I was clean. It wasn't a lovely Christmas, you know. And, you know, and I asked her, and she was my sponsor. She was a fantastic woman, and still is. And but, you know, over time, the thing was, I kind of, I worked my step 8 and 9 with her, and she helped me a lot around the relationships with my family. And I've had some really lovely Christmases with my family. And this is the first year, both of my parents are dead now. My mother died in February. And so this is, for me, is sort of the first year, you know, where I don't kind of feel, you know, we'll have a big family Christmas because it's what my parents really want. You know, and I'm really looking forward to sort of doing an NA Christmas. I've never sort of had the opportunity to do that before. In this reading yesterday, in the you know, Who is an Addict, I felt really emotional when we were reading it yesterday, because it was talking about addiction, and it was saying things like, you know, some of us kind of carried on and were in denial and sort of chasing that last high. And I thought, actually, at the end of my using, I had no illusions like that. I wasn't kind of really looking, you know, chasing a high, really. You know, I was just trying to get by, you know. Another bit says, you know, our using problems... our living skills were reduced to basic levels, and I think, you know, what that made me think was, you know, if I was stoned, I didn't really sort of think about washing. If I was sick, I just couldn't stand the sort of feeling of water on my skin, you know. You know, I sort of look back on that and just feel a bit horrified, really, you know. I didn't really wash clothes. You know, it's a bit sort of horrible, isn't it, really? But, you know, it was just a struggle getting by, you know. It's just a struggle getting by every day. It was just a struggle. And the thing was, I ended up in a police station with my son about... how long was that? About 6 months before I started coming to recovery. And really, that was the last time I ever used gear. Partly because, you know, a lot of things sort of came on top. I thought I was going to lose my son. And then I didn't, and then I kind of felt as though I'd had my life. I mean, I didn't really have any sense of, I didn't really have any words like higher power, but I really felt as though I'd had my last chance, you know. I'd sort of, it's a bit of an over-exaggeration to say I'd tried to get clean before, because I'd tried to stop using, and what I'd done was, you know, I'd stop using one drug and I'd use another drug, but I'd always kind of end up back where I was before, you know. And but I felt as though I'd had my last chance, you know. I'd ended up in a police station with my son, and he wasn't put into care, and it felt to me that that if I went back, you know, I would really kind of lose everything. And so I sort of tried to straighten up. And I didn't use gear again, but I started drinking, actually, is what I did. And I was never really someone who could cope with drink, you know. But I started drinking and smoking a bit of dope, and you know, I mean, I always share this. God knows why I did that. You know, I just, you know, if smoking dope used to make me so paranoid and uncomfortable in myself, and heart palpitations, you know. But I just couldn't. I just couldn't not have anything. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't face. I couldn't face life on life's terms, and my family were really, really pleased. You know, they really thought I'd sorted myself out. And it was the most difficult 6 months I've had in my life, really. In some ways, it was more difficult than when I was using, you know. It's just like this raw insides, you know, unable to kind of deal with other people's social situations, any of that kind of stuff. It was just so painful, so emotionally, mentally, spiritually painful, that eventually I ended up in an NA meeting, you know. And I didn't get clean right away. And one of the reasons was I never really heard that 90 meetings in 90 days. But I kept coming back, you know, I kept coming back. So I started coming. I started coming after a few weeks, I got clean. I started coming in December, I got clean in May. So it took me about sort of, you know, 5 or 6 months. And then I just really decided that I'd give it a go. You know, I picked up a white key ring. I had a sponsor, but obviously, you know, I wasn't really sort of doing much with her. You know, I started being honest, really. I started being honest with her. And I started working the steps, you know. And in a way, that was a great thing. You know, I hadn't been to treatment, so I really didn't understand the language, you know. There were lots of... I used to listen to, you know, convention tapes a lot. And I've got this convention tape, and this guy says, you know, coming into NA is like being parachuted into Sweden. And if you were parachuted into Sweden, you'd need an interpreter to help you understand what people are talking about, you know. And that's what a sponsor is in NA. And, you know, and I had this sponsor, you know, amazing woman, and she was a year clean. When I got clean, you know, she was a year clean. And that was quite a long time when I got clean, a year clean. I can remember someone getting a 2-year key ring when I first got clean. And I was, you know, I was absolutely blown away. 2 years clean. I couldn't believe that anyone could have been clean for 2 years, you know. And she was a year clean. And I thought, you know, God, she's got a year to wait till she gets another key ring. You know, how on earth is she going to stay clean, you know? Because really, that was, you know, for me. You see, I picked up a one-day key ring. Then, you know, 30 days later, I picked up a 30-day key ring. And for me, that was phenomenal, you know. I'd never gone 30... You know, I felt that I'd cleaned up a few times in my using. I'd never gone 30 days not using anything at all, ever. You know, I mean, that was astounding to me. 30 days, you know, not using anything at all. Not a drink, not a line, not a hit, not a pill. You know, nothing. 30 days clean, amazing. So, you know, I kind of got into recovery. And then after a little while... you know, after a little while, I realised, you know, I started... In fact, I can remember the day, actually, that the first day that I really, really sort of felt good, you know, I had a boyfriend who was in prison, and I was going up to see him, and as I was going along this motorway, there was a break in the clouds. You know when there's a break in the clouds and you see the sun, and you can actually see the sort of a ray of sun shining down. And I looked at this ray of sun and I thought, God, I'm happy. And I just thought, I feel good inside myself. You know, I just felt okay with myself. And it had been so long since I felt okay with myself. Such a long time. And, you know, bit by bit, I felt that sort of more and more, you know. I mean, you know, when I look back at early recovery, you know, I found early recovery really, really difficult. You know, I used to... I lived in a council flat with my little boy, and I felt that I owed him a lot, you know. I dragged him around dealers, you know. And then he'd ended up in this police station, you know. And we were being evicted from our council flat. And so I felt that I had to work, you know, and I got this temp job. And I used to catch the tube to Green Park and get the 14 bus down the Fulham Road. And at that time, you could smoke on the tops of buses. And I used to sit on the top of the bus, have a cigarette and cry because it was all so fucking difficult. But there was a guy... there was a guy who was one of the founders of NA, Johnny, and he sometimes, I don't know where he was working, but he used to cycle past this bus stop at Green Park and he used to stop and talk to me. And really, you know, it was like kind of royalty stopping and talking to me, you know, and he used to go, how are you doing? How's your day been? And then he'd tell me a little bit about what he'd doing, or he used to go over to New York, and then he'd tell you about these meetings where people had to hand their guns in before, you know, they went into the meeting and stuff like that, you know. It was just amazing. And so, you know, bit by bit, I kind of felt a bit of it. You know, I felt a part of it. My first commitment, I was the literature person at... St. Stephen's Hospital, which was the hospital before Chelsea and Westminster. They had a hospital there called St. Stephen's, and that was kind of around the corner from where I used to live. And that meeting had posters, you know, like handmade, like little posters you say, think, a day at a time. And I used to put them, I used to take it home and I used to put those around my bedroom so that when I woke up in the morning, it was like, think, a day at a time, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, that was a brilliant commitment, you know, because I used to sort of read, you know, I'd sort of read a pamphlet at home in the evening and stuff like that. You know, and that led on to all sorts of things. The reason I took a commitment at that meeting was they used to say at the end, oh, we're having a business meeting, if you want to stay till the end of the business meeting. And there was a woman in there who was the treasurer. And, you know, and it was all these blokes and this one woman. And she was really kind of assertive and she'd say so. And I just think, oh, God, that's so amazing. You know, she's kind of sitting there. She can speak up for herself. She's kind of, you know, and I was so kind of uncomfortable in myself and found it difficult to talk. And I thought, well, I'd really like to kind of be like that. I'd really like to be a part of things like that. And that meeting was really good for me. I did my first sort of secretary commitment there. When I was at that meeting, these two guys came back from Bournemouth where they'd been in treatment, you know. So I guess we were all about a year clean at the time. And they're two of my best friends now. And I've done tons of service with them, you know, H&I, office duty, all that kind of stuff. And they're part of a group of friends. There are seven of us. One of these sort of seven people moved to Germany. But when we were 25 years clean, we went up to Fortnum & Mason and had this really kind of swanky tea and all sat around telling each other using stories. Do you know what I mean? It was like all these people sitting having these sort of very smart teas and we were just like roaring with laughter, telling all this kind of crazy using stories, having this really, you know, expensive but wonderful tea. And really all of my friends are kind of, you know, people that really all of my friends are people in recovery. I mean I know people out of recovery and I've got work colleagues out of recovery. In fact, I've got a woman that I've been working with quite a lot this year and she's really nice and she's having a hard time and, you know, we've talked a lot. She keeps saying we must go out for a drink and stuff, and I've told her about a million times, oh, I don't drink actually. Yesterday she went, I've got a little present for you, and it was a bottle of, I'm not even sure how you pronounce it, is it Prosecco? Prosecco? I think that's how to pronounce it. I just think, you know, how many times I told you I don't drink, you know. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, it's that sort of interesting that people find it hard to believe that you don't drink at all when you say you don't drink. What's I going to say? So most of my friends are kind of people that I've known in recovery, and... time's gone quite quickly. So I'll talk a little bit about, you know, what's happened just recently. So I've done a couple of different sorts of service and recovery. One is, I mean, I do sort of finance for a living, you know. In recovery, through my work, they kind of paid me to become an accountant, you know, and I do sort of financy things at work. And that really, you know, that's been a very productive channel to put my sort of obsessive, compulsive, you know, making the numbers add up and all that kind of thing. You know, I kind of like all of that stuff. And I've used that in NA, you know, I've done treasury for conventions and stuff like that. So, you know, and really that, a lot of stuff that I've learned in recovery has, you know, helped me. You know, I've been able to sort of take that out into the world. And the other stuff I've done is H&I. And that has been really, really brilliant for me, you know, because when I, just before I started coming to NA, my sister, I'm not quite sure how she kind of got me to see someone. I don't know who this woman was. She was like a sort of psychologist sort of woman, you know, and I went and saw this woman. Oh, where am I going with this? I went and saw this woman and, she said, because I couldn't understand how I'd ended up where I'd ended up again. Because a few years before, I'd tried to sort my life out, and I'd taken some really big steps to sort things out, and I was back where I'd been before. You know, how did that happen? How did I keep on ending up at the same place, you know, using, out of control, you know, just physically, mentally, spiritually, just completely, you know, screwed. And I went and saw this woman who said, she just kept saying to me, "Oh, you must be really angry." And I thought, I'd got no idea what you're talking about. I was never angry. I was just depressed all the time, you know. And I got into recovery and, you know, and obviously I started to understand what my problem was, you know, you know, it's amazing when you come in. It's amazing when you come into recovery and you start hearing people talking and they're saying things and you suddenly think, they're saying what I think, but I've never been able to put that into words before. You know, that I just, you know, used to go out of meetings with my head just so full of what people had shared, you know, stuff that... Because you don't sit around and talk about that sort of stuff when you're using, do you? You don't say... In fact, people used to say, "Oh, I feel really feared up." And I used to think, "Oh, you know, poor you. Thank God I don't feel that." And I tell you, really, it was... I kind of got to step 6 and 7. And I would say, you know, that took me about 18 months, 2 years to get to that before I really realised that my whole life was ruled by fear. You know, fear and self-hatred, those two things together. You know, what a toxic mix. And but you know, the thing I like about H&I is that you'll go into a place, and that's what you know, and that's what you hear people say. You know, how did I end up here again? You know, because that's addiction. You just go round and round and round in that cycle, and just end up. You know, sometimes it'll seem like you're up a bit. You know, you've got a bit of gear, a bit of money. See, or you know, it all seems okay, and you know, and then it all kind of falls to pieces again. You just go round and round and round in that cycle. You know, and the great thing about that is, you know, they don't care if you sort of work the steps or, you know, that you're sounding good or anything like that. They just need to know that there's a way out when you're doing H&I, you know. The chance to kind of hear that there's a way out of this, you know, like that for me, the chance to hear that, you know, to kind of go somewhere and see people talking about addiction and laughing about it, you know. Because for me it was so, you know, serious and difficult and all that kind of stuff. So that was really good. What happened to me over the last few years was my father died in 2002 and my mother was sort of completely devastated. And she moved to being near my sister and that didn't work out particularly well and I was kind of driving backwards and forwards across London and every weekend and it was just really, really exhausting. You know, I was working, I was doing that, I had my own sort of family and she started, you know, she started sort of falling over and having accidents and things like that And I was kind of worrying about it a lot. And my partner said, you know, we were living together, you know, we were living in my flat. And he said, you know, we could get somewhere together and we could get a granny flat for your mother to move into, which was pretty generous, you know, pretty generous sort of thing. And yeah, it was, isn't it, for a guy to say that. And so we got this house with a granny flat, and my mother moved into it. And I kind of thought it would be good for her because she could go and see her sister, who didn't live very, you know, she was on the right side of London to go and see her sister, and she could get out and do things. Unfortunately, by the time she moved in, she couldn't really go anywhere on her own because, you know, she was just sort of a bit unsteady on her feet. And then her sister died, her baby sister died, and her best friend died, and she was sort of on her own with it. And she started, you know, she started becoming very sort of weak and frail. And over a few years, you know, she was just very elderly, and she was very elderly and very frail. And we had carers at home, but it meant that I had to sort of let go of a lot of things. You know, I had to let go of doing a lot of service. I had to let go of some of the meetings I went to, you know. So I was going to my home group, but that was pretty much all that I was doing, going to my home group. And I sponsor a few people, and I have a sponsor. So, you know, I was kind of in touch with all that sort of thing. And I'd always been, you know, like, felt that I was in the centre of NA, and I felt a bit as though I was sort of on the, you know, on the sort of outskirts. And I was at home one day, and I got an email. Was it an email or a phone call? And I was asked if I'd do a share at the World Convention in Barcelona. I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, I just... It was a friend of mine at Region who had sort of, you know, sort of given the committee my name. It's kind of hard to explain how I felt about that, but it was as if, you know, I've been given a really, really big sort of present by NA, you know, and a real kind of... It was just one of the most amazing experiences of my life, really. You know, I went out, it's just a really, really fantastic convention. You know, I mean, I don't think I'm a great kind of convention speaker or anything like that, you know, but just the opportunity to go there and, you know, it was just an amazing thing, you know. I just think it's one of those things that I'll look back on and think, you know, that was something amazing that I did. I find it difficult to put that into words, but I feel as though, you know, that was NA kind of hugging me at a time when things were really, really difficult for me, you know. You know, when I think about Christmas last year, that was very difficult. You know, my mother was very, very ill by then, you know, and we had a hospital bed, and we were just about to start having hospice nurses in. You know, my mother died at home on the 26th of February. She died at home. She didn't have any pain medication or anything. She wasn't in pain. I was with her. It was sort of quite late at night. I had said to her, I say a little prayer at night time, so I'll say it for both of us tonight. And I said the Serenity Prayer. And then we sort of, you know, I sort of dozed off a bit. And then I woke up about half an hour later, and you know, her breathing had slowed down, and she sort of just died, you know, at home, and I was with her. And that's an amazing thing, you know, that's both my parents who died at home, and I've been with both of them, and, you know, I feel very blessed. That was, you know, that was a fantastic opportunity for me, thank you. And this year, you know, a lot of this year has been quite difficult. My sponsor says to me, grief is a physical thing. You know, it has been very physical. I would say over the last few months, something has shifted. And I stopped working. I've worked all through my recovery. I'm now working 4 days a week instead of five. I've started going to a lot more meetings. I kind of... I want to do this I'd like to do this Christmas Day thing. And someone phoned me up the other day and asked me if I'd do treasury around a convention again. And I think, oh, yeah, I feel as though I'm kind of, you know, getting back and, you know, sort of starting to have the opportunity to give back again. I love NA. I really love NA. I love the people in it. I love, you know, I very often find it hard to accept myself. But, you know, when I come to a meeting and other people accept me, you know, I find it a lot easier. It's just, you know, if you're new around, it's, you know, I found it difficult. I stuck around. It's such a great thing. Such fantastic things have happened. I've done such brilliant things. I've travelled around, you know. I was talking to Frank beforehand, you know, he's going off to India for 3 months. And I went, oh, you lucky thing. And then I said, actually, if I decided that that's what I wanted to do, I could do it. You know, I have the choice nowadays to do what I want in my life, you know. And the great thing is, if you're in recovery, there are meetings everywhere. You can go anywhere and, you know, hook up with NA. Fantastic. Thank you for letting me share. I'll end there. Thank you very much. Thank you.